This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Today's show was pre-recorded, so we won't be able to take your questions and comments. Coming up, we'll talk with Sidney Blumenthal about the life and career of Abraham Lincoln, and we'll hear from the president of the country's oldest national humane organization. But first, in Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon, author Larry Tye chronicled Kennedy's transformation from a cold warrior into a fiery liberal. With the dramatic change in the political landscape brought about by the election of President Trump, Tye says Robert Kennedy's political life has even more relevance today. He suggests progressives look to RFK as a model for a candidate who can appeal to both working-class whites and minorities. Larry, thank you for joining me today.
Great to be with you.
Robert Kennedy's often remembered these days as he was when he ran for president in 1968, as a champion for minorities and the poor, and someone who opposed the Vietnam War. But was he always the liberal icon that many of us remember him as?
He started out as something on the opposite end of the ideological spectrum and on the personality spectrum. It was as a conservative, cold warrior, whose first real job was with Senator Joe McCarthy, the red-hunting, civil liberty-bashing, anti-communist. And Bobby Kennedy in those days was very much a chip off his father's block. His father was, as some of your listeners may remember, Joe Kennedy, the guy who built a dynasty and who built a reputation as being an incredibly hard-edged political operative. And that's who Bobby started out in life as, which makes his transformation to a hot-blooded liberal even more interesting.
So that's interesting, the association with Senator McCarthy. Was that because of his father, or how did he explain his work for McCarthy?
So it was for two reasons. It started out, like so much in his life, with his family and his father. Bobby had spent most of his young life trying to please his father. He was what Joe Kennedy called the runt of the Kennedy litter, which meant not just that he was the smallest of the boys, but that he was also the one that Joe thought was least likely to matter. And Bobby wanted to show that he could matter. So one way to do that was going to work with Joe McCarthy when Joe Kennedy said that was what he ought to do. But Bobby Kennedy also believed in those days, as did much of America, that the Soviet Union was a mortal threat. And he thought that Joe McCarthy was the one politician in Washington who had the courage to stand up and take on the communists, not just overseas, but the ones that he felt were infiltrating our government.
So what happened to that relationship with McCarthy? Did they eventually have a falling out of some kind?
So what happened was Bobby Kennedy stayed working for him for 7.5 months. And when Bobby ended up leaving, he said that it wasn't because of any break with Joe McCarthy. And in fact, they stayed friends and he stayed loyal to McCarthy through the end of McCarthy's life. The breach, Bobby said, came because Roy Cohn, Joe McCarthy's young, aggressive aide, was somebody who Bobby thought was doing in the senator, that he was so aggressive that he was trampling on people's rights and was not doing the senator any good. And that was a very interesting take on it, and certainly Roy Cohn was not a sympathetic character, but it was also Bobby Kennedy being blind to the fact that the boss was not Roy Cohn, it was Joe McCarthy, and the one who ultimately was responsible for what his staff was doing was Bobby's friend, Joe McCarthy.
So, Larry, as you note in the book, Bobby Kennedy goes from being a cold warrior to a fiery liberal. How do you account for such a big change, or was he just being politically expedient?
So, in today's lexicon, and with our cynical approach to politics, we would call that flip-flopping, and we would say this was blowing with where he saw the political winds going. I think it was something quite different. I think that it was as much of a heartfelt transformation as we would see in politics. That I think he often, in making his change to a liberal, was often defying the political winds. He was against the Vietnam War when much of the country was still for the Vietnam War. He was willing to do things aggressively on civil rights when that was not what Democrats, the solid Democratic base in the South, wanted to see happening. And I think that what he did was he was following his own sense of changes in the world. He was growing as he was experiencing things. And most importantly, his changes were a lens into how America was changing from the conservative era of Eisenhower into the tumultuous era of the 1960s.
How extensive, Larry, was the research you did for the book, and how did you go about conducting that research?
So the research was pretty extensive. I read probably 500 books. There had been so much written on Bobby and on the Kennedys.
Yeah.
I looked through boxes and boxes of new papers that were made available to me by the Kennedy Library, by the Kennedy family, by others. And maybe most importantly, I interviewed somewhere between 400 and 450 people, many of whom were talking for the first time, and a sadly large number of whom, in just the 3 years since I started writing my book, are gone. So Bobby Kennedy, last November, would have turned 90. So you can imagine that his family and friends and contemporaries were getting old. And I was in a race against two things: age and their surviving, and senility, which meant their surviving and having a memory of what had happened 50 years ago.
So you feel, though, that you've got a very accurate picture of Bobby Kennedy.
I feel that if I don't have an accurate picture, then we may never have one, because the people who could give us that picture are gone. And so it was a magical moment. The moment was between the time all the Kennedys, who would perpetually circle the wagons and try to keep people from telling the full story, those Kennedys were gone and there was nobody to circle the wagons, and yet lots of people who knew the story was still around. And sadly, this is the last chance to get a firsthand account of it.
How much of a hand did Robert Kennedy have in his brother's political careers?
He had the guiding hand. He was the guy behind the scenes who was orchestrating the campaigns, who was knowing what Jack ought to talk about, keeping him from talking about things that he didn't feel he should talk about. He was, I think, the father of the modern campaign, with all the best that means in terms of outreach to voters and all the worst that means in terms of hard-edged negative campaigning. And without him, I think it's easy to say that Jack might never have been senator from Massachusetts, and I think it's even easier to say that without Bobby, his brother would never have won the incredibly narrow victory he did against Richard Nixon in 1960.
Now, when John Kennedy was president, this is pretty astonishing to me. He named Bobby as Attorney General of the United States. So it sounds like these two were very close personally. Is that the case?
So it was astonishing to you, and it was astonishing to much of the Senate, which had to confirm Bobby, and to much of America, which had never seen a vice president, an attorney general, that close to the president. Bobby was the closest appointee that a president had ever made in terms of a family member assuming a position in the cabinet. He was the third youngest attorney general in American history, and he may have been the least experienced lawyer ever to be named attorney general. He had never practiced in a court of law. So it was astonishing. It seemed a little bit scary. And yet Bobby Kennedy, I would argue, turned out to be, if not the best, one of the two or three best attorneys general in the history of the country.
Well, what kind of record did he have? Is it correct when people say that he cleaned up organized crime?
It's correct to say that he went after organized crime harder and stronger and more consistently than any attorney general ever had. It's correct to say that while at the beginning of the administration, he was on taking a go-slow path on civil rights, by the end, he was the strongest civil rights advocate that office and maybe any cabinet office had ever seen. And it's fair to say that there was no attorney general who seemed to be more devoted to protecting the rights of defendants and the rights of the average citizen, whether that meant giving bail more easily, whether it meant making the Justice Department about more than just prosecuting, but about looking out for justice. Bobby Kennedy understood all the dimensions of that office. And one last thing he did that no attorney general has ever done in the history of the country is he turned out to be not just his brother's top advisor on domestic issues, but his top foreign policy aide everywhere from the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis to what we did in interacting with the Soviet Union.
Now, Bobby had relationships with two of the major figures of the civil rights era, Martin Luther King and Alabama Governor George Wallace. What did they think of him, and what did he think of them?
So the short answer to both of those questions is not much. They didn't think much of him. Martin Luther King, at the beginning, understood that Bobby was there to protect his brother Jack as much as to advance civil rights. George Wallace saw him initially as a patsy in terms of somebody he could push around, but as somebody who represented Washington and all that Wallace would end up running for governor and for president against. And yet, by the end, Bobby Kennedy had become a much clearer force, such that by the end, he stood up to Wallace when Wallace made his famous stance against integration at the schoolhouse door at the University of Alabama. Bobby essentially got the black students registered and pushed Wallace aside. And Martin Luther King, by the end, understood that all the faint hope that he had that Bobby Kennedy could turn into an ally and a real leader for civil rights, all of his hopes came true. And he understood by the end that Bobby Kennedy was the most trusted white man in black America for good reason.
Yeah, speaking of Martin Luther King, other biographers have outlined the role that John and Bobby played in getting him out of jail during the 1960 presidential campaign. And you've got some details in the book that have never been told before. What are those details, and how did you happen to get them?
So the details are, as Dwight Eisenhower famously said when he was asked why Richard Nixon, his vice president, lost so narrowly to Jack Kennedy, he said it was two phone calls. And those two phone calls were one that Jack Kennedy made, and that was public at the time, to Coretta King when Martin Luther King, her husband, had been arrested. And it was a call of sympathy saying, I think he's been arrested, I think it was unfair, and I'm really feeling for you. That was the public call. Behind the scenes, Bobby Kennedy was making a phone call, an inappropriate phone call, if not unethical, for a lawyer to make to a sentencing judge in Georgia, telling the judge you ought to let Martin Luther King off. And the judge did that, and Bobby Kennedy helped orchestrate behind the scenes a move that had in every black church the Sunday before the election. Pamphlets were handed out saying, vote for Bobby Kennedy, the candidate with a heart, against Richard Nixon, the candidate who did nothing for Martin Luther King. And the margins of victory in five or six crucial states were the margins that Bobby Kennedy and Jack Kennedy managed to get in a black vote in those states that Dwight Eisenhower had gotten 4 years before. It was essentially the party of Lincoln, the Republican Party that blacks had always voted for, started to be the party of the Democrats in that 1960 election. And behind the scenes, a lot of people, including the then governor of Georgia, decided to tell bits and pieces of the story that they hadn't told before. And I was just lucky enough to be the guy who was there to hear it while they were alive to tell it.
And that action by the Kennedy brothers swayed things in favor of John Kennedy in that race against Richard Nixon.
Yes. So a lot of people have looked at that election and says, geez, it was that Jack was more photogenic than Richard Nixon in the TV debates, or that they stole votes. Richard Daley, the mayor of Chicago, stole votes from the graveyard in Chicago for Jack Kennedy. Those things may have mattered, but what mattered more, and you don't trust me, you trust the ultimate chronicler of that election, Theodore White, who wrote a book called The Making of the Presidency in 1960, it was the African-American vote in critical swing states that turned things around for Jack Kennedy, and it was Dwight Eisenhower who recognized it.
Is there a key moment, Larry, a turning point for Bobby Kennedy and his transformation? Because he starts as more of a conservative, he becomes this liberal icon. What's the turning point, the key moment in that?
So there were a lot of key moments, but if I had to point to a single moment of epiphany, I would say it was in November 1963. Bobby and Ethel Kennedy are sitting at their swimming pool at their estate in McLean, Virginia, and the hotline to the White House rings. And on the line is, to Bobby Kennedy, the horrible J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI director, who says your brother's been shot. The death of Jack Kennedy in Dallas cost Bobby his boss, his best friend, his brother. It also cost him his sense of purpose in terms of what he had been doing for much of his professional life. It had been defined by Jack Kennedy, defined by Joe Kennedy's notion that there ought to be a Kennedy in the White House. Bobby went through 7 months of clinical depression, what I would call, in retrospect, clinical depression. And when he finally came out of it, he was a different Bobby Kennedy. He was reading Greek tragedy, which Jackie Kennedy had pointed him to. He saw that hubris, like the Kennedys had, could come crashing down and that tragedy was all around us in the world. And he had a sense of empathy that he had never quite had before. And so we're all a blend of the tender and the tough. And Bobby Kennedy's needle went from being mainly tough for the rest of his life to being a whole lot more empathetic and tender. And I think that governed everything he did as a senator and as a presidential candidate right up until his death.
Yeah, Bobby himself is assassinated when he's running for president in 1968, and this is just 5 years after his brother's death. It's 2 months after the assassination of Martin Luther King. Now, had Bobby not been killed, what do you think were his chances of winning the Democratic nomination and then ultimately beating Richard Nixon for the presidency that year?
So I've compiled what I think is convincing evidence. Anybody can say anything in terms of what would have happened because we didn't live through that scenario, but I think what would have happened is the day after his extraordinary victory in the California presidential primary, which was the night that he was killed, he was planning the next day to go to Chicago. The son of the then mayor, Richard Daley, tells me that his dad, the most powerful big city mayor in America, was planning to endorse Bobby Kennedy. I think that would have set off a series of endorsements by the powerful kingmakers in the Democratic Party, and they would have decided that they couldn't stick with Hubert Humphrey, the vice president, who had never entered a primary and never had anybody vote for him for president, that they would have gone with Bobby Kennedy. And if he had been nominated in Chicago, all the protests and the riots that happened there that doomed Hubert Humphrey's candidacy would never have happened. And if there was any single man in America who knew the vulnerabilities of Richard Nixon, it was the guy 8 years before that had won a successful campaign for president against Richard Nixon. It was Bobby Kennedy. He was dying to take on Nixon. Nixon understood that Bobby Kennedy was an incredibly powerful potential opponent, and I think Bobby Kennedy would have been president. And if he had, you can't have more of a contrast than the guy we ended up with, Richard Nixon, and Bobby Kennedy, who was passionate about everything from civil rights to ending poverty, and I think would have given us a very different America. And I'll take that one step further. I think a lot of the racial tension that we're seeing today in the country, if we had had a candidate who was all about redressing that tension 50 years ago, if we had dealt with some of those issues, you know, half a century ago, I think we might not have them cropping up again the way they have today.
Now, in the preface to the book, you say that you acknowledge that you are a fan of Bobby's. The book, it's balanced. It points out the good. It points out the bad about Bobby Kennedy. So by the end of the book and by the end of doing all this research and writing it, are you still a big fan?
So I think the only way we can truly have heroes if they're flesh and blood heroes, and if we know all that was wrong as well as right with them. And I spend at least half the book pointing out things that Bobby's family and others will not like me for saying things that were wrong with him. But I think that explains why he became the extraordinary figure that he was by the end. And so the short answer to your question is absolutely. He was even more of a hero to me at the end because he seemed so human and multidimensional.
What makes his story relevant 48 years later? Why should people still care about Bobby Kennedy?
So there are a million specific things, what he said about race, what he said about immigration, what he said about ending poverty, that his answers still resonate today because we haven't solved those problems. But even more importantly, when we look at our choices today for president, I think many of us, half a century later, are still looking for the precise, tough, liberal, or tender conservative that Bobby Kennedy represents and that we don't seem to have out there as a choice today. And I think the perfect contrast, if we want to understand what politics could be like rather than what it seems like today, is to look back to Bobby Kennedy in 1968.
Larry, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
You've been terrific, and I appreciate being with you.
Political historian Larry Tye, his book, Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon, is now available in paperback. After the break, we'll talk with Sidney Blumenthal, who just released the second volume in his biography of Abraham Lincoln. And later in the show, Thane Maynard talks with the head of the American Humane Association. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.